Parshas Ve'era by and large is where the Mitzrayim and Pare started to see firsthand, up close and personal, exactly the Yad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do. They saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make miracles, can wow them, blow them away. That was perhaps the lesson of Parshas Ve'era for most of us. However, I believe there's a deeper lesson in Parshas Ve'era, not just for the Mitzrayim, but for us as well. The end of Parshas Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu is having a discussion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's somewhat complaining. He's telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't get it. You told me to go to the Mitzrayim, you told me to go to Pare, I went to Pare, and it backfired. Not only didn't he let them out, he actually made the work more complicated, made the work harder. So, what was exactly is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to Avram, to Moshe? His response is, you have to understand how things work here. Let me explain to you. What looks to you as making it harder for Klal Yisrael is really better for Klal Yisrael. Because yes, the work might have gotten more difficult, but because the work got more difficult, they were able to leave earlier. Says Rashi, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not like your forefathers. You have to understand how things work. What may look to the naked eye as bad and evil is not bad and evil. Because everything that I do in this world is ultimately good. It takes some time and some investigation to see why it is good, but you have to believe that all that takes place is good. Here also, says Hashem, the intense work was only to get the Jewish people out earlier. So although to the naked eye it looks like it's much harder, but it's really l'toy for Klal Yisrael. And that's why the Gemara tells us in Shabbat, and the Gemara tells us in Brachos, that a person should get rogel to say, kol man da'ovid rachmano l'tavavid. Get used to it. Why? Because it's going to happen throughout your day, throughout your life, that you're going to have those moments where you don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to the naked eye, it seems as if it's very bad. But you have to get used to realizing that kol man da'ovid, all that Hashem does, is really for good. And that's why, as Rabbi Fran points out, at the end of Parashat Shemos, Hashem gets so mad at Moshe. Why? Because he used a very, very misleading word. He said, Loma hare yoisa. Why did you make it bad? Hashem says, it's not bad. It may look bad. It may think it's bad, but it's not really bad. Because everything I do in this world, for Klal Yisrael specifically, is really good. You don't always see it. It's often covered and it's masked, but there's no bad.
Bad things happen to bad people for a reason.
Though. That's that. It precedes, it's not really bad. Because it's good. Right, it's a kapara, or it's productive for whatever reason. Reb Steinman would used to give the mashal, it's like a surgery. If you'd walk in the middle of a surgery, you'd see a lot of blood, and you'd see sharp objects, and you'd see a person laying there on the table, you would look like the guy's a ritzeh, he's a murderer. The answer is obviously, we all know that a surgery is to prevent or to heal an issue that was going on. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, yes, it does look bad, and it is bad. But if we were to know that this bad is for a tayelis, it's mechaper on this avera, it's going to get us this, it's going to give us this, who knows what? That's the idea we have to believe, just like here. Klal Yisrael was working harder. There's no doubt. They were working harder. But this is what got them out so much earlier. Instead of having to wait 400 years, it got them out earlier. So therefore says Hashem to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to realize, and this is really what I call the intro into being Am Yisrael. Parshas Ve'era, we're getting to Kabbalah Sotar, we're getting out of Mitzrayim. These are all the things we need to learn, as does Moshe Rabbeinu. As what does it mean to be part of Klal Yisrael? You want to be part of Klal Yisrael? This is what it takes. You got to learn this lesson, that there is no bad in the world. It may look like bad, it may be perceived as bad, but we as Jews believe everything is bad. Everything that looks bad is obviously structured as bad, but it's for our benefit, and we believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a cheshbon on why he does it. But I think there was another lesson that Klal Yisrael learned in this week's parsha. If you look at every single Makkah, when the Makkah had to leave, how did the Makkah go? Moshe davened. Why can't HaKadosh Baruch Hu just let Moshe Rabbeinu wave a hand and the Makkah would end? So Yochum Lubavitz points out that the lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching us is that if you want to obtain things in this world, the way they're obtained is through tefillah. Tefillah, that's how you get things. You want things, you daven. That's how you get things in this life, in this world. This is a lesson that Klal Yisrael is also learning pre-Kabbalah Satara, pre-Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is the fundamentals of becoming Am Yisrael, these two lessons. But perhaps these two lessons are connected to each other. Because it's difficult for a person to see bad and say to himself, I really believe it's good. Yeah, we can say it. It's always easier to say it to someone else who's, it's not our tzar, it's your tzar. We're very quick to say, oh, you have to understand, it's good, don't worry. But how do we really believe it? How do we train our mind and our heart more than anything to believe it? The answer is through tefillah. The more a person davens, the purpose of davening is to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really there. He believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really listening, he's really an av, he really cares about you. If you really believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about you, then you really can understand that he's not trying to get you. He's not trying to hurt you or to harm you. If you build a relationship, and the greatest way to build a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through davening. So once you come to the realization through davening that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a real essence in your life, is a real being, is a real oyev, so then it's a little easier. Not all easy, it's not completely fixed, but it's a little easier to be margish, to feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not trying to stick it. it to me. Just like we all know when our parents, we presume if they're healthy, they're not trying to ruin our lives. As much as we say that when we're teenagers, they're trying to ruin our lives. We believe our parents are really what's doing, hopefully, are doing what's best for us. Our parents that have negias, of course. But we understand as children and as parents ourselves, we want to do what's best. Now, it doesn't always come off that way. Sometimes to the child, they think that we're the worst people in the world. And all we're really trying to do is to help them because they don't have that broad vision. So if we can look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a parent, so then it's a little easier to deal with what we call the ups and downs of life. So perhaps these two lessons are not independent lessons of intro to becoming Jewish, but they complement each other. If you're willing to work on your tefillah, then you will be able to have a little bit of an easier time saying Kol Man D'Avid Rachmana L'Tav. The power of tefillah everyone knows about, we talk about it all the time, the ability to accomplish things through tefillah. They say over with Rav Moshe Feinstein, a great Rav Moshe Feinstein, we'd all consider Rav Moshe Feinstein a pretty big masmid. And yet when Rav Moshe Feinstein was notified that one of his grandchildren, I think, was ill, so you would think he would just continue to learn and just have more intense learning. He closes Gemara and he said Tehillim, because there's a certain kayach that we have to Tehillim every yeshiva. If you've ever been in any yeshiva when there's a certain tzara, they learn more, but they also stop to learn and they say Tehillim. There's a certain kayach atfilah that's put into the system through davening and through Tehillim that can even perhaps be more chashiv at times than learning, even though learning is the most important thing in the world, we know that. But sometimes there's a certain power, there's a certain avenue of kayach atfilah that we can't compare to. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Klal Yisrael, that I needed to remove these makos through tefillah. Not for the Mitzrim. Mitzrim, we're going to be done with them in a few parashas. But it's for you guys, for us, Am Yisrael. We need to learn that the key to getting things in this world is tefillah. You want something in life, you daven for it. Whatever you want, you got to daven for. I just read an unbelievable story with Reb Chaim Kanievsky. There was an avreich, a kollel man, who brought his son, 8, 9 years old, to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. He said, I have to bring you my son. What's the story? His son was diagnosed a few months before with Nebuch cancer, and he needed to go through chemo. And as often with chemo, he was going to lose all his hair. But he told his father, I don't want to lose my pace. I'm willing to take whatever I need. This is an 8-year-old kid. I'm willing to take whatever I need to do it. I'm willing to go through the pain and suffering because Hashem wants it. But I don't want to lose my pace. I want to keep my pace. So his father told him, so daven to Hashem, you should keep your pace. So this little 8-year-old kid davened every single day that he should keep his pace through chemo. And he comes to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. The kid is completely bald except for his pace. He was able to keep, through the power of tefillah, he was able to keep the rest of the hair on his body. Again, from a medical standpoint, this makes absolutely no sense. Chemo does this. But because this kid davened so strongly and so makbid on his tefillahs for this, he was zeicha that he didn't lose the hair of his pace. And they brought this kid to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Chaim Kanievsky was so impressed, he called his entire family in to look at this child and to see as that child who davened for such an outcome, which al pi derech hateva shouldn't happen, and he was zeicha to it. That's the power of tefillah. When a person davens, he can reach, he can obtain the unobtainable. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Klal Yisrael in this week's parasha. Tefillah is such a powerful tool. It can get us what we normally can't get up in derech hateva. What's the impossible becomes possible through the kayach tefillah. And that's what Klal Yisrael learns pre-Matan Torah, pre-Yetzias Mitzrayim. The next couple of parashas are really, I call the intro into Am Yisrael. This is one of the most important intros we can learn as Jews, is the intro to Kabbalah Satori, the intro to Am Yisrael is the kayach tefillah. Rav Palm wrote in 1986, just to put it in perspective, he wanted to be medama the maka of Tzvardeya to terrorism. He said, like, the maka of Tzvardeya was just uncontrollable. There's nothing you could do. And how did you end it? You needed tefillah. Says Rabbi Palm, terrorists and terrorism, 1986, Alachas Kam Vakam, what's going on today? It's a machlon. There's no way to treat it. You can't stop everything. Tefillah. The only thing we can do, the only security system we have, is tefillah. That's our best security system. That's what he writes in the Kayach HaTefillah in 1986. Because it was just...
Because the more they hit it, the more...
We'll get to that in a second. Perhaps. There's a Gavaldika Svorna I mentioned in the Chumash here, but I think it needs to be mentioned again. It's an unbelievable Svorna for everyone to hear, for grandparents, parents, and children alike. The Svorna was bothered with the Kasha. Why exactly does the Torah take a break in the middle of the story between Moshe and Hashem to tell us who lived when? Tells us about Reuven and Shimon and Levi and who Amram married. And it was a very irrelevant story. Says the Sforno, it's to teach us one lesson. It's to teach us when Levi lived and how long Levi lived. Says the Sforno, do you want to know why Amram produced a Moshe and an Aaron? Says the Sforno, it's because Levi, the grandfather, was involved in Amram, his grandson's upbringing. Take a look at the Sforno on that pasuk. He says, because Amram was mechunach, he was educated from his grandfather. His grandfather Levi spent time with him, he taught him, he educated him, he guided him in the Derech Hashem. That's why Amram produced a Moshe and an Aaron. It's an unbelievable idea. means if a grandparent puts time into his grandchild, he ensures not only does his grandchild turn out to be a godly dar like Amram was, but it's passed on to the next generation. You have a Moshe and an Aaron in the next generation. An unbelievable idea. What's the pshat? I think the pshat is that when a parent tries to be mechanech his child, so the child takes it with a grain of salt. He says, yeah, dad wants me to do this, dad wants me to do that. You know why? Because dad's the one who has to go to PTA, and dad's the one who gets the report card, and dad's the one who has to hear from the Rebbe if I'm not behaving. So there's a little bit of negiah, so to say. But grandpa, what does he have to? He doesn't get the PTA, he doesn't get the report cards. Why is he pushing me? Why is he educating me? Because it must be really important. This must be something of a value that he's trying to give over to me, and there's really no negiah. Okay, today the grandparents are involved in paying for tuition. That's a new thing, but it used to be grandparents were done with tuition. So why does grandpa care so much if I'm doing well? Because it must be important. And the child understands it like that. He perceives it that this is something chashuv. And therefore he wants to pass it on to the next generation. Therefore says this morning, when a grandparent shows a concern in his grandchild's education, that grandchild will not only grow up to be a wonderful Torah scholar like Amram, he will be able to then produce another generation of great scholars like Aaron and So on one hand, it's a gevaldik zchus for a grandparent to be involved in their grandchild's life, but on the other hand, it's a big achrayus. Because if you're going to be involved, you got to make sure you're giving over the right messages. You make sure you're a positive role model. You make sure you're directing them in the right way to how to fear Hashem. You know, I always tell people in my shul, a lot of times they come into grandchildren's shul. I said, if you come to your grandchildren's shul and you spend the whole shul talking, so what message are you giving to your grandchildren? It's okay to talk in shul. That's not proper chinuch. If you're not going to show them the right chinuch, if you invite your kids over for Shabbos and you spend the whole time telling how the rabbi's no good and he's no good and his shir's no good and he's a bad person, so what do you think the children are going to grow up? So it's an achrayis and a schus at the same time. It's always like that. Those things that are the most important always come with the most responsibility. So it's a gevaldik schus that people have the ability to change the future generations. Not just this generation, but the next generation, the third generation, which some people are zeichet to see, some are not zeichet to see. But you have the ability as a grandparent, it's a gevaldik great schus to be able to really change history, change your legacy by spending time. You don't have to spend all day long. Just show an interest. You know, do things that show that you care about the chinuch. Ask them how yeshiva went. You know, what'd you learn? What's this? Little things. And don't grill the kid for a hair. That's how you turn kids off. You make them nuts. Don't grill them. Don't make them nuts. Don't make them sit for 8 hours and learn with you. That's not what they want. Show an interest. Show what's important to you. Show that this you value as much as they should be valuing it. And that, says the Sforno, is how a person is able to raise children like Moshe and Aaron.
It's going to work for the sage group. Right?
That's what I figured. It can't hurt.
I mean, you don't say this word to 20-year-olds.
Usually not. No. I thought it was a nice one. I thought it was worth mentioning. It's a gevaldige site. By the Maka of Tzvardeya, everyone has a kasha that the stipler was really the first one to ask him. My daughter came home for a parsha sheet. Her mower asked it also in Beis Yaakov, so it's a good kasha. If they would have just stopped hitting the frog, the whole Maka would have stopped. This is a basic kasha, right? Stop hitting the frog. If you see when you hit the frogs jump out. So stop hitting the frog. The stipler was the first one to write this. When you're angry, you don't always think. So my daughter asked me, she said, what do you mean? I don't understand it. I said, next time you're angry and you slam the door really loud in my house, you'll understand what I mean. When we're angry, we do things without thought. That's the terrible machla of kas. Kas is a very powerful emotion, and it leads us to make very bad decisions without thinking. So therefore, Zuck the stipler, that was the midah of kas. Again, all of the makas, although it was a punishment for the Mitzrayim, it was really a lesson for us. Everything we have to take away from us, not to say, okay, it was a lot of fun to watch them suffer, but we got to learn from that. What do we do when we're angry? We do a lot of illogical, foolish things. We do things that are not smart, and we regret later. So we have to work on that. That's our midah, is to break that kas and become, and work on it. Rabbi Farnes said over, I think that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik used to say about himself, he had a terrible midah of kas. He spent his whole life working on it. Ever meet a brisker? You know what I'm talking about. Maybe even a Soloveitchik, depends which side of the family. But in any case, kas is a strong midah. It's not easy to overcome kas. People get quickly. We get angry very quickly. You got to work on it. And that's why the Torah teaches us the makav tzvadeh. Alam the shavar that I think this shir would appreciate is from the, someone told me this, B'shem the Panovich Rav. Pasuk says by Orev, by Dever, which one was it? Hayarez Dvar Hashem, which makav was that? Which one? That's by Orev or Dever? They bring the animals, that was by Dever, right? By Barat. So it says by Barat, those who feared Hashem brought their animals in. So the obvious kasha is you don't need to fear Hashem to bring your animals in. You have to be at least a decent better. Because look at the odds. The odds of Moshe Rabbeinu has been right every time so far. So if you have to gamble, you gamble Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be right again. So what's a Yari Dvar Hashem? Someone told me, Moshe the Panovich Rav, that pshat was like this. They came to Moshe, they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, we'd love to bring our animals in, but we have these massive animals. Where are we going to put them? So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, there's a din called Rishus HaYochid. If you put up wires, you put up fences, it's like a bias. So Zokta Panavitrov, Hayores Dvar Hashem, those who feared Hashem and believed that that is considered a bias, they made themselves a little Rishus Hayachid. With mechitzas, they taka saved, because they brought their animals for this little mechitza, and that was Hayores Dvar Hashem, they taka feared Hashem. Why did they fear Hashem? Because they believed in this idea of a Rishus Hayachid that could be made through mechitzas, and that's why they're called Hayores Dvar Hashem. It's a little bit of a chiddush. Someone told me it's Rishus Panavitrov. But I think Pasha Pshad is in the Bali Musa speak already. Nope. What's taka Pshad Hayores Dvar Hashem? So the answer is, many times in life we see things that it doesn't really move us too much. How can you not be motivated? Look what you saw. The answer is, okay, we don't think about it. We're not some leif. We don't think about it. That's a Yared Vashem. It takes a certain level of looking in the world around you and saying to yourself, okay, I'm getting the message. I hear the message I'm supposed to be thinking about. I hear what I'm supposed to be doing. People can live their entire life and see messages in front of them, chush, jumping out of them, and they say, I'm not in the spot. What was Pyro's response when he heard some of the animal, the Jewish animals weren't affected? That's it, I'm going to go further. Okay, shouldn't that have been the greatest wake-up call that you're wrong? He said, no, but there's still animals alive. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not as strong as he is. We see what we want to see. We live in a world that we can see the messages clearly and they don't motivate us. And we'd say to ourselves, we're better than them. The Chafetz Chaim said Bilam was a genius. But Bilam never stopped to think. He never stopped to think, what am I doing? Does this make any logical sense? And we live in a world today that no one thinks. Everyone's so busy. Everyone's so caught up. Everyone's always plugged up. There's never a time where we just stop and think. That's the beauty of Shabbos. We have a chance to stop and think that what we're doing makes no sense. This is one of my comparisons to Hitler. Hitler, from a strategic point of view, was making terrible decisions in the war. Many of his generals left him towards the end of the war because he was making terrible, terrible decisions from a battle point of view. The answer is, he was so caught up with his desire to kill Jews, he wasn't thinking clearly. He was doing things that were completely illogical. It made no sense to win a war. In my humble opinion, he totally would have won World War II on so many levels if he wasn't so preoccupied by killing Jews. If he was more preoccupied about conquering territory, I believe he would have came to America. There's no doubt in my mind. He would have lost, I think, in America. But he would have gotten that far. He was so preoccupied. He was so caught up in this anger and this desire to kill Jews. He completely lost all sense of how to do things logically. And that's why many of his generals left him towards the end of the war. So Pyro is the same idea. Pyro was doing things illogical because when you're so caught up and you're so driven to do something, very often you can't see the clear light. And that's really true in our life also. We're caught up and we want to do something bad or not right. You can have a million signs. Moshe Rabbeinu could come himself and tap you on the shoulder and you'd say, no, I was just dreaming, it's not real. He meant it for my next door neighbor, he got the wrong house. Very often in life we see and we hear what we want to see and what we want to hear. Okay.
Didn't you say a similar word to going outside to be davening? You know, is that why you go outside? Did you go outside because of nature? And this way your mind can start to think.
I said that the Kleoker says why all the great leaders were shepherds. Oh, when you're a shepherd, you can go outside. You're able to be one with HaKadosh Baruch. There's no cell phone reception there. It's a lot easier to daven.
Oh, you didn't say that word about why he had to go outside and see
No.
No,
that's a separate kasha. Why only that makkah did he have to go outside? Right. So there's a cute test in the Meshech Chachma, but okay, we'll have to leave that for a different time. Okay, let's get back into the Gemara over here. The Gemara says, we're holding over here in the Gemara. The Gemara's trying to figure out, how do you know lulav is Deicha Shabbos? How do you know Lulav and Machshirah is Deicha Shabbos? So I'll just read the Gemara very quickly. I really want to just get to the end of the Gemara. Omer Mar. Lulav and Machshirah of Deicha Shabbos. Lulav and all its prep is Deicha Shabbos. Divi Rabbi Eliezer. Another Rabbi Eliezer. How does Rabbi Eliezer know this? If you tell me to learn from the Karbonim and the Shtelechem, which are both Deicha Shabbos, that's not a Raj. You can say Givaya. Those things are higher level because they go into Bizbeach. Elo Makrat and Mefurshe Pasuk. Biyoim. It says in the Torah, "Lakachdem lochem biyoyim rishon." Should take on the first day of Sukkot biyoyim afilu b'Shabbos. So I learned from that pasuk that even on Shabbos, that lulav is deicha Shabbos. Obviously, before Rabbah came to town and made exeret the Rabbah, in the times of the Torah, lulav would be taken afilu b'Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "Lamai hachas." So why do I need a pasuk? Ilay melo tiltul. If it's just to circumvent the problem of muktza, it's zuchkal mishri tiltul. Do I need a pasuk to be matter muktza? As Rashi explains, we'll get to it in a few minutes. The muktza is a din derabbanan. The Torah doesn't have muktza as one of its rules, so I don't need the Torah to write that you're allowed to move, you're allowed to shake a lulav on Shabbos, and don't be concerned about muktza. The Torah would never be concerned about muktza because in the Torah's rules, muktza doesn't exist. So what do I need the pasuk for? Ela l'machshirav. It must be the pasuk is not justifying taking the lulav. The actual taking of the lulav, thank you, is clearly mutter on Shabbos. The pasuk is telling me I'm allowed to prepare the lulav. I'm allowed to go to the tree and cut down the anaf etzavos. I'm allowed to cut everything down in order to be able to take the lulav. So that's how we know machshirei lulav is doiches Shabbos. Frek di gemara v'rabbanon. What are the rabbanon who argue and say no, machshirei lulav is not doiches Shabbos? Why not? They use the pasuk for something else. They use the pasuk v'lekachtam lechem b'yemirishin to tell me that you don't shake lulav at night. Lulav is only a time-sensitive mitzvah. It can only be taken during the day. You can't take lulav at night.
Is kept in the house, or
you
allowed to take it out?
That's what we're going to talk about today. Today we're going to get into a lot of the nitty-gritties about what's the halachic status, both in lumdus, a little bit of halachal, nice, more lumdus, the status of a lulav A on Yom Tif, and B, a lulav on Shabbos.
Is that the machshiri? Does it allow you to take
That's going to be part of the question. Let's say you want to start preparing your lulav the night before Sukkot. Let's say Sukkot is Monday. So Sunday night there's no mitzvah. You want to start preparing your lulav, so you'll take it out and you'll put it together.
So you want to go take it out to shul.
Or you want to take it to shul. You want to
not preparing it. It's already prepared. Right.
You want to do something with it. Would that be mutter? So let's just finish up the Gemara. The Gemara says, what are the Rabbanan? They use the pasuk of Biyoim to exclude Laila. Okay, so now the flip question is, how does Rebbe Eliezer know that you only shake lulav during the day and not at night? Nafkulin from a different pasuk. It says in the pasuk, when referring to the mitzvah of lulav b'mikdosh, 7 days, there it says yomim, so now I know yomim v'leilois, I don't need a lekachtam lachem b'yom to be a ma'at leilois, and therefore that's how I know that lulav is doicha Shabbos. So now the question is the flip, the Rabbanon. So why did the Rabbanon learn from Yom V'Leila, not learn from Usmachtem? It's really they need it. Sakat, I mean, I would have thought, Neilev Shiva Yomim Misukkah, I would have learned either Gzeir Shavah or a Memetzinu from Sukkah. Ma'al Halon Yomim V'Afilu Leilos, Afkan Yomim V'Afilu Leilos. Meaning, when I come to the Pasuk in the Torah, Usmachtem V'Fnei Hashem Alekechem, Shivas Yomim. I don't know how to read that Pasuk. Should I read that Pasuk, Usmachtem V'Fnei Hashem Alekechem, Shivas Yomim, Yomim V'Leilos? Would I read the pasuk? No. I don't know how to read the pasuk. I don't know what to take away from the pasuk. Do I make the diuk that I made in the previous pasuk, or do I say to myself, no, don't make such a diuk? Why don't make the diuk? Either because I have a memetzinu that there is a concept of 24-hour mitzvahs like Sukkah, or I have a gzereshava that tells me compare it to Sukkah, but I don't make that conclusion. Yom v'leilos. Therefore, kamash malon. Kamash malon what? What's the kamash malon? So again, according to the Rabban, I only have one pasuk. That b'yoyim tells me b'yoyim v'loy b'layla. What about the next pasuk? The next pasuk, I don't know what to make out of the next pasuk. I'm not sure what to learn out of that pasuk. I don't know what to what extent to define the word yoyim. Do I compare it to sukkah? Do I not? So therefore, that pasuk is unlearnable. I can't learn anything from it. So I'm only left with one pasuk. It's b'yoyim v'loy b'layla. But the question then still is, in fact, the Mishmer Shabbos and Moshe Karp, he says, I don't get it. The Rambam writes in the end of Hilchas Lulav that from the pasuk of Smachtem Lefnei Hashem Lekechem, we learn at the midst of Simchas Beis Shaveva. When does Simchas Beis Shaveva take place? B'yoyim u'b'layla. It's a 24-hour party, the Gemara says in Sukkah. So, Frektim, I don't get it. If you're telling me that the pasuk of Smachtem Lefnei Hashem Lekechem is telling me yomim compared to Sukkah, right? So you're telling me Kamash Malon, how do you learn the Gemara? Kamash Malon, that's not pshat in the pasuk of Smachtem Lefnei Hashem. So if that's not pshat in the pasuk of Smachtem Lefnei Hashem, so how can I learn Simchas Beis Shaveva as b'yoyim u'b'layla? The Teretz is a snapshot in the Kamash Malon. The Kamash Malon is not Usmachtem is only Yom V'loy Laila. The Kamash Malon is I don't know what to learn from Usmachtem. Usmachtem is unconclusive. I can't conclude which way. And I only have one pasuk left, B'yoyim, and that's B'yoyim V'loy B'layla. That's the Gemara's Kamash Malon. The Kamash Malon is that the Rabbanan held Usmachtem of Nehashem Lekechem is a non-conclusive decision pasuk. I don't know what to make from that pasuk. I don't know if Shivas Yomim should be read Yomim V'loy Leilos or it should be read Yomim U'Leilos. I don't know. I'm not sure. So this pasuk is taken out of the mix, and I'm only left with one pasuk. If I'm only left with one pasuk called b'yoyim, so that's memayit b'yoyim v'loy b'layla. And therefore, says the Rabban, I only have one pasuk excluding layla. I have no extra pasuk to tell me that machshirei lulav is deicha Shabbos. But could be in the kamash malon, now that all the smoke clears, now the Gemara says, okay, now we'll go back to that pasuk, and I'll plug into that pasuk, and that pasuk taka means b'yoyim u'b'layla. That's possible. What the Gemara meant was that this pasuk is non-conclusive either way, and therefore the Rabbanan felt they only have one pasuk left. If you only have one pasuk left, you have to conclude b'yomim v'loy b'leilos. That's the chayra.
You don't use this for Simchas Beis Hashoreh, but just that there's a special mitzvah Simcha Yisera on Sukkot.
Right, but the
what would be according to that way then?
No, because the pasuk shan the pasuk, if you look it up in Chumash, it's talking about the mitzvah of taking the lulav and the mikdash kol shiva.
Right.
We expand on that to teach us the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov and then the mitzvah of Simchas Beis Shoreh.
Right, but I'm saying, but according to him, he's saying it only dafka by in Beis
Shoreh.
That's
but the
Rambam, right? Is Simcha?
Right, this is not the Makar of Simchas Yom Tov. This is the Makar
of
Smachtem B'Chagach, a different pasuk. This is a special Simcha. We spoke about this a few weeks ago. Rabbi Tzal Zolti had a whole pshat, and this is the mitzvah of Simcha expressed vis-a-vis the lulav. Really, the mitzvah is Simcha, but the way you express it is through taking the lulav. That's as Rabbi Tzal Zolti is Lomnish Pshat in the Rambam. Yeah.
And what does Gemara be proof against the idea that there's two separate mitzvahs, the Mikdash and the Bulan? Because all the Rabbanan had to say, instead of giving a whole thing,
we talked about this, right? We had this share. We talked about this, right? We had this discussion. Is this a riot to the Machlokes Rishonim that it's one big mitzvah just expanded?
Well,
or it's two separate mitzvahs?
Right.
So the way the Ritva learned that it would be a memetzinu. The Ritva learned that Eina Hanami, the Lulav B'Mikdash is different mitzvah than Lulav B'Gvulim, right? It'd make a memetzinu. So we tried to dramatize it by making it more exciting and saying it's not stamped two different mitzvahs. According to B'Tzal Zolti, it's a whole different lumbus of the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of simcha expressed through a Lulav as opposed to the mitzvah of Lulav. Okay, so we talked last week about this Rashi, number 3. Look, Rashi. Why do I need a pasuk from Muksa's Rashi Ulahai for this? V'afilu b'Shabbos, even Shabbos, he named it l'taltal. If I need a pasuk to tell me I'm allowed to move a lulav, because the mash makor l'kicha tiltal b'almu, it's just moving. V'adayim b'matan Torah l'nesa tiltal. Muksa was never yet prohibited at matan Torah. The etzach kol mishvi l'hai, that I would need a pasuk to be matrit. So what do you see from Rashi? That avada a lulav is Muksa. It's just that Muksa is not awesome midaraisa. The chayr, what you see from Rashi, seemingly Rashi is telling you that avada a lulav is muktzah on Shabbos, maybe even on Yom Tov as well. But I don't need a pasuk to permit shaking a lulav to bypass muktzah because muktzah doesn't exist in the Torah's rules. So if the Torah was permitting taking a lulav, it must have been something deeper. But what you do see from Rashi, at least the pashtus of Rashi, is that lulav is taka muktzah. But muktzah is not an issue because muktzah wasn't around in the times of the Torah. So we're going to get to in a second what type of muktzah. You could have learned Rashi differently. You could have learned Rashi. The Rashi's not saying really a lulav is. Rashi's just saying worst case scenario, worst thing it could be is possibly muktzah, and even that's not a problem. You could have learned Rashi like that also. Rashi's not saying it's for sure muktzah. Rashi's saying, you know, let's play devil's advocate. Worst scenario, the worst thing you can create of a lulav would be muktzah, and that's not a problem. But even that's not a problem because really a lulav is not muktzah. You could have learned Rashi
muktzah when you're. It's not muksa when you're using it for the mitzvah.
That's right. We're going to talk about that. That's Taisu's issue. That's a machlokes rishonim, which hopefully we'll develop a little bit more today. We mentioned in number 4, there's a Taisu's in Sukkah Daf Membeis. Taisu's has a similar Gemara where the Gemara is talking about why in the Mikdash, where they used to take the lulav 7 days, the Gemara says, it's the first Mishnah in the 4th Perek, that sometimes lulav in the Mikdash was 6 days, sometimes it was 7 days. So the Gemara Mishnah explains why sometimes 6, why sometimes 7. Depends when Shabbos fell out. If Shabbos was day 1, they took it day 1. If Shabbos was a different day, they didn't take it. Meaning, they wouldn't take it on Shabbos, unless it was day 1. So the Gemara says, why wouldn't you take the lulav in the Mikdash on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, it's only tiltal bi'alma, it's only moving, which we are now learning is really means to say it's just muktzah. So Taisus over there in Sukkah says, what muktzah? Avagav dechazi l'mitzvah. So Taisus, why is it muktzah? It's usable for a mitzvah. Shayich bei iser muktzah l'taltal. It's still considered muktzah. Me'acher de'ein also ikli. Because it's not made to be a kli. So it sounds like from this Taisus, like we saw from Rashi, that avada lulav is muktzah. The Gemara was just saying that even though, again, same cash like us, it's muktzah, but we don't care about muktzah because muktzah is only din derabanan. But really and honestly, a lulav would be muktzah. But you're allowed to take it to do the mitzvah. It's chazi l'mitzvah, it's ra'oi for a mitzvah, but nonetheless, it still does become a kli. If it's not a kli, it becomes muktzah. What type of muktzah would it be? It would presumably be like stones, like etzim v'avonim, which is called muktzah machmas gufa. It has no shame kli. If it has no shame kli, it becomes muktzah. That's what? You couldn't use it on a rabbinic level. The Gemara's kasha was we're holding on a deraisa level. So we spoke last week about this kasha. Reb Shlomo Zalman asks it that what happened to be making it? Just like you can be making stones before Shabbos, you can be making a lulav. So we mentioned Reb Shlomo Zalman's pshat. We'll see a little bit more about it this week as well. However, there is a yeah.
If it wouldn't be for Xera Darabo, would a Megillah on Shabbos be muksa or not?
No, I don't think so. First of all, I think many Achrenim argue it might be muktzah machmas chasar and kis today. They're very expensive. Right. But pashtus, it's not. It's usable. You can read from it. You can learn from it. You can use it.
You could.
One can use it. You can learn it. You can practice. Chayr shouldn't be. I mean, a lulav doesn't have a shame kli. A lulav doesn't have. You know, maybe if you want to, if you need a stick to play pool, you'd use the back of the lulav. But other than that, a lulav doesn't have a shame kli. We'll see the difference between that and a shayfer. A shayfer has a kli. You can use a shayfer. You can scoop out soup. You can drink. You can. Right. Is what you, a lulav is a pretty useless thing.
So again, the same thing. If it wouldn't be for Xera Darabba, a shayfer would be what?
That's what we're going to talk about. That's machlokes achrenim. What would all these things be? Forget Xera. What about Shabbos? Shabbos there is.
What do you mean?
On Shabbos,
you don't date because Xera Darabba. You don't date it, so then it becomes muktzah.
Right. So question: so halacha lemaisa. So what type of muktzah are these things now? That's what hopefully we'll get to in a few minutes. There's a Rashi in Sukkah, which we mentioned last week. Again, this is just a quick chazara. Rashi in Sukkah is going on the Gemara. The Gemara says in Sukkah, Mishnah comments that a lady is allowed to take the lulav from her husband after the husband takes it. The Gemara asks, why is that a chiddush? The Gemara answers, I would have thought that she's not allowed to take the lulav. Kamashma, she's allowed to. What's the havamina? So Rashi says over there in Sukkah, daf number 5, on the right side. So Rashi says, Emaloi, the legabo ikka is a total. I would think she's not allowed to take the lulav because for her, the lulav is muktza. Since it's befitting for men to take it, it has a shame kli, or muto betaltal lekoil. Everyone can move it. So Rashi seems to be saying is that a lulav is not muktza. A lulav has a shame kli. It has a shame kli for men. Therefore, it has a shame kli for women. And therefore, a lulav is not muktza. So this Rashi seems to be in a disagreement with that Tosfos. There's another chiddush that people bring from this Rashi, which is widely rejected by the Rishonim.
Something that has a use,
yeah.
Something that can contain
that's something. That's the Machlokes Rishayim. That's Gufa. We mentioned last week, that was the Rabbi Soloveitchik learned the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. How do you define a kli? Is having a use a kli just for mitzvah enough? Or does it have to have an outside use, a choildik use, a non-Shabbistik, a non-mitzvah type of use? That was the way Rabbi Soloveitchik learned the Machlokes Rishayim. There are those who bring a raya from this Rashi that when a lady does a mitzvah saseh as magrama, she's not even mekayim a mitzvah. Why? Because why did Rashi have to say it's a kli? Because it's a kli for a man, therefore it's a kli for her. It's a kli for her, because when she shakes it, she gets a kiyum mitzvah. She has no chiv, at least she has a kiyum. At least she gets a check. Why does Rashi have to stretch it and say, the only reason why this lulav is a kli is because it's a kli for a man, therefore it's a kli for her. It's a kli for herself. Because she, when she takes this lulav, gets a check in Shemayim for doing a mitzvah. So there's a minority opinion that we show and widely rejected that you see from Rashi, the Rashi held not like that. Rashi held that when a lady takes a lulav, a lady sits in the sukkah, she gets absolutely no credit. Now it's connected to Gemara Kedushin. I don't know how you learned that up.
Work. Is it that you don't have the mitzvah, or you have the mitzvah but you're exempt?
I would assume.
It's different, right? In other words,
I would have assumed that the way the Mefarshim set it up is that they have a ptur. So that's the argument. That's the argument of whether or not they can make a bracha, whether or not they get a kiyum a mitzvah. Meaning, well, lady does.
Somebody else. If they have a ptur, then they should be able to be.
No.
They should be able to be Yotze a man because they're in the parsha.
No, they're not in the parsha. That ptur takes them out of the parsha.
No, that's it. What do you mean? It means they have an exemption. If they don't do it, they're not tied for.
I would have assumed. That's the kash that we always ask of it. We have the famous Avudraham. The Avudraham says the reason why women were part of Mitzvah Nagroma is because their time is not theirs. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew there'd come a date where they'd have responsibilities at home would contradict their responsibilities to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mevater. He gives up on his glory for the Shalom Bayis. A big shalom by his drush. But the point I always ask on this Avudraham, the fizah, why do women go out of the way to do mitzvah as my grandmas? What happens in every Jewish house? The wife makes herself crazy to go his shayfer and to go all these other things, and she creates more shalom by his problems. You missed the point. The point was the other way around. Things should be calm in the house, not complicated in the house. So there are those who say, Lefidah, they shouldn't be allowed to do mitzvah on grandma. They were exempt for a reason. It wasn't just like we said to Tatula, sit down, we don't want to bother you. There was a big reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to exempt them. And then you're going to go out of your way and make yourself obligated? But the assumption would be is that if a lady does have other, she gets a check. There's a famous Magen Avraham, we've spoken about this many times, the Magen Avraham writes that Kvashav Yalem Choyva, women already accepted upon themselves mitzvah on grandma to the point that it becomes binding. So the Chayim said, you defeated the whole purpose. We exempted them for a reason. Why are they going to go now and obligate themselves? They missed the whole boat. The whole purpose was to give them their free time to be able to deal with their family, and they're going to go out of the way and say, no, we want to be obligated. Kvega writes that in a tshuva. One of the first tshuvas of Kvega, he writes that many mitzvahs of my grandma, women already put it upon themselves. So people said, well, when did this happen? Was that like a big asifa sanoshim one day? They got together in Madison Square Garden, they all decided, we want to buy into mitzvahs. No one knows when this happened. They say it by Svir Soimer. That's what the Magen Avraham writes it, by Svir Soimer. And it gets very tricky, because let's say a lady misses. Let's say women decide they're all going to listen to Shaifer. So let's say 1 year, a lady can't go. So she has to be Matan Neder. Does she have to go anyways? Well, it gets complicated from a halachic standpoint. But the idea is that they're exempt. So if they're exempt, they're out of the parsha. So if they're out of the parsha, I would have assumed they're out of the parsha means they're out of the obligation part of the parsha, like the Gemara says, "Godel hametzuvah v'oiser yoisim mishena metzuvah v'oiser." You get less credit, but you get credit. Here, there are those Rishonim who want to say from this Machronim say from this Rashi, you get no credit. That's why the only reason why it's a kli for a lady is because it's a kli for a man. She on her own wouldn't be able to make this a kli because she has nothing out of it. She gets no chiyuv and no kiyum. So therefore, Rashi says the reason why this lulav is a kli for her is because it's a kli for him. But in any case,
you're saying Rashi that it becomes a kli because we said last week that. Mitzvah is machshavit. But maybe that's only a mitzvah where you're
mechuyev. That's another way to write. That's the other way you could have learned Rashi. Right. The Havamino is that when a mitzvah makes something into a kli, it's only when it's an obligatory. That's the Shachvatai of the Gemara. The Havamino was that since women have a kiyum, but not a chiyuv, that's not enough. Kabashmul, no. The fact that they have a kiyum a mitzvah, even that, is enough to make it a kli. Yeah, that's not what Rashi's saying. I would have learned that without Rashi. But not Rashi, that's why I would learn the Gemara. I think Shakla of Taya, the Gemara is, in the world of Muktzah, what takes off Muktzah and makes it a Kli? Is it enough that you have a Kima Mitzvah, or you need to be obligated to take off the Muktzah? That's the Lomdish way. No, but then what does that have to do with the man? Who cares about the men? The men are irrelevant to the equation. If it's a Kli because I have a Kima Mitzvah, then it has nothing to do with whether the men...
No, the Taras of the Gemara is that it's not enough, and therefore it's only because of Rashi, because it's not, she has the Kima.
Oh, okay, right,
it's
right,
not
right.
enough to
right.
make it
and therefore,
you need to rely on the man.
Right, but then you'd be coming out and saying that women... Right, at least in Hilchos Muktzah, Kima is not enough. Maybe a Vada, they do get a check,
right.
but it's not enough in Hilchos Muktzah. Yeah, that would be nice. That would be a nice way of learning the Gemara. So we mentioned last time, Rabbi Salvechik learned this also, that Tosfos doesn't buy into this. Why doesn't Tosfos just say it's a Kli because he used for a mitzvah? So he says along the lines of the fact that you're doing a mitzvah, if its whole usage is just mitzvah, that's not enough to make it ois muktzah. He doesn't say why. So I found a sefer over here, the sefer called Pnei Baruch, some commentary. He writes like this, V'atam Yeshloimer, what's taket alumdus? Mishum the mitzvah's lavel henes nitnu. Ah, okay, we'll go that route. Because we have a principle that mitzvah's lavel henes nitnu, umemela, loichoshev shimush the mitzvah shimush l'tzorich adam. When we talk about an object, we say that this object serves me. This object doesn't serve me. This object serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, through this object, I will be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'll be able to do mitzvahs, this, and that, and the other. But be'etzem, I get no pleasure out of this object. Right, the kasha we mentioned, why can't it be Mechen? Mechen works when I'm using it for myself. Meaning, for example, I have a big boulder, and I want to be Mechen. So what I do before Shabbos, I'm Mechen, and I put it at to hold up the door for the duration of Shabbos. So I used it for my personal benefit. I inject it into the Kli usage for me. However, by the lulav, it's not about me. I'm not using it for me. I'm using it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, he says, "Shenena me'am shaydei ze'ena chashuv v'mukta av she'enam asuim kli." So buy it. Buy a stone. I can make it usable for me. But a lulav is never about me. It's always about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, but you can argue on this also. You could say, who cares why? Exactly. You could say, lamaisa, I need to use this lulav. Because if I don't take this lulav, I'm mevat l'mitzvah. So I want to use this lulav. You can argue along this, and this the kud that he's making. Yeah.
An antra, because it has a nice smell, could be a clue.
So that's a separate child. Yeah, we're not going to talk about esrig. The Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, the friendship between esrig, because you can always use it for smell. That's a big question. You have to smell, no smell. Can you smell it over sukkahs? But yeah, an esrig is a different, because it has an element of smell to it. Yes, that's the Ramah himself points out in Shulchan Aruch.
When
so,
you're making
yeah.
something, like you said, like the rock, you have to move it to the door. You have to actually do a mitzvah with it, or you could just have it in mind?
It's a machloikis. I think it's a machloikis apaiskim, what you got to do. If you have to speak it out, you got to do something to it. It's not so simple. You got to do something to show that you're making it.
But you know, it's not just you can have in mind that I'm going to use this on
I think it's a machloikis, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's more complicated. I remember when I once went through it. It's more complicated. People think, I plan on using it. You got to maybe have to do a mitzvah to it, mm-hmm. to be making it, to miyachid it for that purpose. Okay. So we have a machloikis with shinim on our hands that we need to really get into. To Rashi and Tosfos says, what's the status of a lulav? Is a lulav mutter? The Gamri, it's a Kli, at least on Yom Tov, it's a Kli. While according to Tosfos, it's not a Kli. A lulav is not a Kli. It's mutter l'mitzvah, say nothing more, nothing less.
But isn't it all,
yeah.
isn't it all the meaning together?
Yes,
mitzvah,
correct.
Not just a lulav by
good point. That's what we're going to see later on in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to tell us that lulav is a very unique mitzvah. It's made up of a bunch of different parts. Usually most mitzvahs have one mitzvah, do the mitzvah, like milah, one act. Here there's four parts to one mitzvah, but four different components. We will be neither see, hopefully today share, how exactly that's going to impact things, lahalach. We'll get to it.
So but the Gemara, milah without the minim could
not nothing.
Be moksa, but with the minim might not.
Right, we mean in order to do the whole ma'aseh mitzvah, obviously we mean lulav and the whole shebang.
Is that what we're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, we're talking about lulav and all it takes, and all its trimming, so to say. No, not if it's not a kli. Not if it's not a kli, right? So that's what we need to get to today. Let's try to understand the halachic status of lulav. There's a chayr, a huge nafkamina. There's a huge nafkamina. Pasha the nafkamina between Rashi and Tosfos, which we'll get to, is according to Rashi that a lulav has a shame kli. When does it get the shame kli? So does it have the shame kli ready the night before? Or does it only have the shame kli when you have the mitzvah? Because the night before there's no mitzvah. But yom v'loy b'layla. So let's say Sukkot is Monday. So Sunday night you want to start getting your lulav ready. Start preparing it. You're putting it together. You're moving it around. This and that. You want to show it. It's Yom Tov. You want to show it to the rabbi. You want to show him how nice the lulav is. How good of a deal you got. Whatever it is. What happens now? So you'll tell me. It's Rashi says it's a kli. Why is it a kli? Is it a kli because be'etzem it's a kli? Because it is. I'm going to use it tomorrow. Tosfos will tell you it's muktzah right now. Tosfos will tell you it's muktzah right after you take it. According to Tosfos, the moment I finish taking the lulav, it becomes muktzah. Because it's always muktzah. I have a heter to do a mitzvah, and then the moment the mitzvah is over, it goes back to being muktzah. So according to Tosfos,
either, it might also
maybe, we'll have to talk more about it.
There rise that it attain the status of a chetz of a mitzvah, even if you can't do the mitzvah right
okay,
now.
Okay, so we're going to have to deal with the kasha. Well, the reverse of what you're saying is what happened to a muktzah l'chatzi yoyim. And if it was heter in the beginning, he's got to stay heter the rest of the day.
Like a hadas, right? So if it grows a berry
that
night.
So we're going to talk a little bit about some shahs like that. But there's a Chazanish over here that's worth mentioning. The Chazanish thinks that Tosfos is very hard to comprehend. Chazanish writes, you can't learn like Tosfos. It can't be that a lulav is muktzah and mutter l'tzoyach mitzvah. Chazanish thinks that's just, that's not there. So but Maisa, what do you do with the Gemara? The Gemara says that shaking a lulav is tiltal. It's muktzah. That's the words of the Gemara. So the Chazanish says, Gevaldik Chiddush, says the Chazanish number 6, he writes, Aval kuli amu l'tzoyach mitzvah l'choshev muktzah. So the Chazanish, everyone agrees that if something is l'tzoyach mitzvah, it doesn't become muktzah. The Lashon HaGemara tiltal b'yalma. So what do you do with the Gemara? Like the Chazanish. The Gemara says, it's tiltal. It's, again, tiltal means in English, it's muktzah. It's not muktzah. Like, so Tosfos said, no, it is muktzah. Rashi will tell you, no, it's not muktzah. But the Gemara says, the simple reading of the Gemara, Daf Mem Beis and Sukkah says, and for that matter, our Gemara seems to be relaying the message that a lulav is muktzah. Zog the Chazanish, no, yeshloim ha-mishom shekodem heter kelim hayu aser. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos there are different phases of how muktzah came about. One of the earliest phases, everything was basically aser. You could barely move nothing. Even things that are not aser. Even kelim shemalach tel heter were not allowed to move unless they had the utmost tzairich for like eating and things like that. So Zog the Chazanish, that's what the Gemara means. When the Gemara says it's muktzah, it doesn't mean our version of muktzah. In our rules of muktzah, a lulav is not muktzah. What the Gemara means is in the earliest stages of muktzah, where muktzah included so much more, it even included kelim hamutarim l'taltel, a lulav would have been in that mix. That's how the Chazanish learns the Gemara. I mean, the Gemara is not in our mindset of muktzah. The Gemara was in the early stages of muktzah. In the early stages of muktzah, you couldn't have moved anything, because in the early stages, you wouldn't be able to move a fork if there was no need. A fork is a klesh machtel heter. What's wrong with a fork? No, we didn't want you stamazay moving things around. So the Gemara thought that would include a lulav also. Not that a lulav is muktzah. Lulav was the most, in the havamin of the Gemara, lulav was the most extreme level of muktzah, which we ended up changing and phased it out.
There were goes of these things that yeah. people couldn't live with.
And then they realized it's too much and they cut it back. That's the whole beginning of the 17th parak.
Does the Gemara even differentiate that?
No, right. It's funny to think that the Gemara's kasha is with that version of muktzah. We always assume when the Gemara talks muktzah, it means the muktzah the way we have it today. The phase, that the stage that we're using. Here the Chazanish is saying, no, it was that original thought of muktzah. Yeah, that type of muktzah. It's a very, very interesting way of learning the Gemara. So that's the way the Chazanish learns the Gemara. But the reason why the Chazanish does this is because he can't be masig that Tosfos is correct. He can't believe there's a Tosfos in Shas that will tell you that a lulav is really muktzah. With all the hachana that you put into it, and it's only mutal mitzvah. The Chazanish think that's very hard to believe. Okay. Now there's a Ramah on Shulchan Aruch, Nechaz Mila. Let's keep, now we're going to take we'll jump a little bit. This is all Yom Tov, Pashtus. What's the status of a lulav on Yom Tov? Is it muktzah, according to Tosfos, or according to Rashi? It's not muktzah. There's a Ramah on Hilchas Mila, number 7. I believe it's Reish Samach Vav.
By the way, is there any between muktzah and Yom Tov and muktzah and Shabbos?
Yeah, that's what we're going to get to right now. Well, not so much between muktzah and Shabbos, but between the lulav on Shabbos, which you're not allowed to take, and the lulav on Yom Tov that you are allowed to take. Meaning, Tosfos was talking about a lulav being muktzah, and we'll see Tosfos is going to even apply to regular Yom Tov, to which the Chazanish thinks is hard to believe. The question is, does that mean that the status of Tosfos and Rashi on Yom Tov is going to be equal for Shabbos, or different? That's what we're going to get to in a few minutes.
And today, the reason why we don't take a lulav on Shabbos is not because of muktzah.
No.
Because you're worried about your
That's
carry.
Right. That's right. We're Xerid the Rabbah. So the question is, so where does that leave us?
So we've held that it's not muktzah then?
That's the
maskana.
Well, not necessarily. No, because Tosfos will tell you you're allowed to take it for the mitzvah.
So we hold it's not muktzah.
Right. What's that?
We wouldn't need that other reason that you might carry it if we were going to hold it was muktzah. They're both Rabbanans, right?
No, but the original Rabbanan was waived so you can do the mitzvah. That's what Taisha says. Even though lulav is muktzah, we allow you to take the lulav to do the mitzvah, and then after the mitzvah, you put it down.
Right.
So we'd be able to do that on Shabbos as well. We would take our lulav on Shabbos, and then put it down right afterwards. We wouldn't be able to.
We had to add the new reason why we can't
that's
do it.
Right.
Why I carry.
That's right. You know, under the first.
So
that's the question. Now, what happens after the fact? We'll get to in a second. So Dr. Ramah and Hilchas Mila. Dr. Mechab. Dr. Ramah. Talk about Mila b'Shabbos. Dr. Ramah. What do you do with the Moyle's knife after Mila? The Moyle's knife is the example of Muktzah Machmas Chasar and Kiss. That's the highest level of Muktzah Machmas Chasar. There's this presentation from this guy in Eretz Yisrael that Sefer and Chulin. I got to see it live in my shul on Sunday. You can get it was on live streaming last night where he shows you the Sheikhtim's knife. And he shows you how careful they are with the Sheikhet's knife. Because the Sheikhet's knife is the other example of Muktzamach Maschus Arnkis. They are very careful with these things. They will never use these things for anything else. A Moyle will never use his Moyle knife for anything else except for doing a Milah. So that becomes Muktzamach Maschus Arnkis. Even though there is one Moyle who writes that because of the Shaila of Shabbos, he Bedavka tries to use it for something else before. So this way, it won't become Muktzamach Maschus Arnkis. And he cuts the Chalom. I don't know what he cuts with it. I don't know. I'm not sure. That's what he writes. So the Ramah writes, "Umutul tatal izemalach." You'll have to move the knife after the milah. Latsniya to hire it b'chotzer hamuruf. Avagav de ina tzorich lo oid boisa Shabbos. L'chayr it's Muktzah now. I don't need it anymore. I used again. A Moyle's knife is Muktzah. I used it to do the mitzvah. Now the mitzvah is over. Now in theory, you should have to drop it. Now we don't make you do that. Not sure why, but you don't have to. So it's okay to move it to a private place. The whole huktzah ben hashmoshes, it wasn't muktzah ben hashmoshes because it was allowed to be used. Me'achad the hayla tzorich l'vayis Shabbos. So it sounds like from the Ramah that there's a middle level over here. I don't have to drop it. I can't put it in my bag and take it home. I'm allowed to put it into a private area somewhere over there.
It wasn't muktzah ben hashmoshes because
it was miyuchad l'mitzvah.
You put it on a bris
then. No, because you got to do a bris tomorrow.
Somebody could have called you up and said do a bris now.
Well, Friday night. You can't do a Friday night. I guess he could. You beloy belaila. You can't. You're not yoytze belaila, right? Yeah, that's what he means. It means when Shabbos came and all the rules of muktzah started, and this knife started Shabbos not being muktzah. So even though now after Shabbos it becomes muktzah, it's still okay. Says the Vilna Gaon, not so. Says the Vilna Gaon, I disagree. He says Avo Maharil Kosav Dimiyad Acher Amila Yizrek Izem Miyade. Don't stand next to a mail on Shabbos. Says the Ramo, right after meal, you throw it out of your hands. That's what the Maril paskens. Right after meal is over, just get rid of it. Can't hold on to it. Not like the Ramo. The Ramo says, take the knife and put it on the side, put it away from danger, away from the kids, whatever. The Maril says, drop it. Like a hot potato. What's the pshat zok devil nagoin? V'darki moishe kosov shinir lo devir ben yiruchim. Says devil nagoin, I think it's meforish and mishayim like a ben yiruchim like this. V'shtam tu divi tesefta v'yushalmi meforish k'devir meril. And they left out a tesefta and yushalmi. It also seems to imply like the meril. Shebe tesefta soif perakam de sukkah. Because there's a tesefta in sukkah that says what? If yoyis yoyim a yom tevarish shachak shachol yis b'shabbos. If the first day of sukkah fell on Shabbos. Kimin shiyotzadei chayvosoi. Also l'tatali. Once you fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, you're not allowed to move it anymore. Mitzvah lulav. Ubi Yushalmi perigimul sham henichu ba'aretz asal tatla. The Yushalmi says over there that once you put your lulav down, you're not allowed to pick it up anymore. Once you put your lulav down, game over. Can't move it for the rest of the day. Zok the gra. What do you see from that? You see that it's not like the Ramah. The Ramah said that once something was motif for mitzvah, it's motif even after the mitzvah. Zok the vilna gan. It's not true. It's motif for the mitzvah, nothing more, nothing less. This is really our Taisus in Sukkah. Taisus in Sukkah said the lulav is muktzah. It's motif the mitzvah. After the mitzvah is over, you have to drop it.
A is mamash is hakana, and B.
Yeah, okay.
No one's going to do it. No one's going to want to do the bris. If he's going to lose his knife.
But why does he say once he puts it down? That's not dropping.
That's
you can move it.
That's the Nitziv's kasha. The Nitziv has his kasha. Frekta Nitziv in Emek Shela, I don't get it. Why does Yushalmi say that by Lulav I'm allowed to put it down, but by Mila I got to drop it? Yeah. It sounds like from the Yushalmi that when it comes to Lulav, I can at least place it down. Meaning, Kol's mind's in my hands, I never place it down, I'm still good. But by the Moyle's knife, it sounds like, no, you got to drop it right away. So the Nitziv answers because the mitzvah of Lulav is a mitzvah nimsheches. The mitzvah continues. Kol zman, the mitzvah is in the lulav and esrog is in your hand. The mitzvah continues.
You're getting a mitzvah.
You're getting a mitzvah, but by milah, it's over. You got no more holding the meal's knife after the meal is over is meaningless.
So if that's true,
right? That's right.
If that's true, then it continues, and you solve the whole problem with the bracha because. Even if I pick it up right, the mitzvah's continuing.
To hold it in a way that I'm not yotze. I hold it in a way that
you
I can't
do. Because it's a continuous mitzvah, so what's the difference? Now it's 5 minutes, or now it's a different mitzvah.
I'm saying, when do you want to make the bracha?
Yeah.
Make it whenever, because it's always going to be over last year. So, because it's, if you can say it's a continuous mitzvah, lagave muktzah,
right?
Then I can make the bracha whenever.
But when are you going to flip it over?
You don't have to. You pick it up. I'm saying that solves the problem. So,
but you're not yoytze to the mitzvah if it's not good.
No, I pick it up the normal way. We say,
you mean and then? Aha, I have you say. Yeah, I guess the
you're still doing some of the mitzvah without a bracha. You don't want to do some of the mitzvah.
What? So 1 second?
Yeah, I guess. I'm not so sure if the minute you're holding the lulav, 20 minutes after you shook it, whatever, at the same level as the first time. I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. That's the argument that Tziv makes to be mechalik between the two. But what does the Vilna Gaon say? Dr. Vilna Gaon. Perhaps that also is a bigger discussion. Not a Miles knife.
No, but there's a lulav.
No, depends what type of muktzah it is. Is it, if it's like stones, it's muktzah machmas gufa. Muktzah machmas gufa, you can't move if you need the space. So we have to figure out what muktzah it's going to fall into. Oh, that's the chayrinat. We're going to see the.
So when you do Hoshanas,
so we're gonna look. Oh, that's a hagbal, but that's another hagbal mitzvah. But let's say you go to a kiddush on Sukkah. So you put it down in someone else's house. Then you want
to
pick. That would be a problem.
How do you bring it to the house? How do you
bring it to the same problem, right? You'd have the same problem. Yeah, we're gonna have to see. Zoktiv on the grain.
This is the after, because if you leave it in shul, someone that may take it.
That's not gonna be matter muktzah.
No,
why not? Muktzah is muktzah, you know. Muktzah machmas gufoy.
If you're somebody taking it, you got a bigger problem.
So listen to the end of the Gaon by say. Zoktim el Gaon v'loy shayich kan in muktzah. Why are you tying the aim muktzah l'chatzi yoyim? The be'emes muktzahu. Zoktim el Gaon, because all these things are really muktzah. A moil's knife on Shabbos is muktzah. A lulav on Shabbos in Yom Tov is muktzah. But el shemotu b'sham tzayich mitzvah. We permit. Where is this coming from? That's Taisvus. Taisvus and Sukkah. The Vilna Gaon is saying like Taisvus. That what? That really avada, all these dvarim mitzvahs are muktzah. A lulav has no shem kli. A knife of a moil is muktzah machmas chasaron kis. But there's a heter to move it l'tzayich mitzvah. More than that, after the mitzvah is over, you have to drop it. So the Vilna Gaon seems to be consistent with our Taisvus. Okay. Zok tadaki Moshe, also the Ramah. I didn't know. Someone told me the Ramah died at 33 years old. No, I didn't know that. Someone told me 33. I didn't think so. I thought that was a chiddush. Yeah, still a chiddush that he got so much done before 40, but I thought 33, I thought was a chiddush. I know the Shach was 41. I know that I knew. But 33 for the Ramah was the first time I heard it.
Ari was 38.
It's 30 something. It's amazing what people can accomplish in those years. Okay. I guess without smartphones, you can get a lot more done during the day. Okay, yeah.
Buddy Holly was even younger. Right?
Yeah.
Because it could be used for a mitzvah. So why are we assuming that it's only the time that it was a mitzvah? Meaning, what came into history? Once we allow you to.
No, so that's the whole Kiddush of Taisvus. Taisvus was not buying into that. Taisvus was saying it's not muktzah. It's muktzah. But we were mad at the muktzah. Maybe. Yeah. Why didn't Tosfos agree with Rashi? Maybe. Why doesn't he buy into that? So the Darkei Moshe writes, the Ramah writes, that's how we got sidetracked over here with the Darkei Moshe, the Ramah writes in Hilchos Lulav. This Ramah is not found in Shulchan Aruch.
Started 42 years old.
Who? The Ramah?
Yeah.
I knew I was right.
Do I have 33?
I'm not like his Google.
Wikipedia.
May 11th, 1572. Died at age 42.
I knew it wasn't 33. Okay. I know I'm not losing my mind.
All right, my Google.
Okay. February 22nd, 1530. Died May 11th, 1560.
They say what day? We know what day he died. He died on Lag BaOmer. That we know. That's the ironic part of Lag BaOmer. Yeah, he died on Lag BaOmer. Okay. So the Darkei Moshe does not bring this in Ramah, but he does bring it on Darkei Moshe on his commentary to the Torah. He writes this. He quotes Yushalmi. Yushalmi that the Vilna Gaon quoted as well. Yushalmi says, Baham Maisa, the Anshi Yushalayim, there was a story with the Anshi Yushalayim. He nichu al gabi karka, they used to put down the lulav. Shuv asal tatali. That was it. Number 9. The Darkei Moshe quotes Yushalmi that says that the Anshi Yushalayim, once they would put down the lulav after the mitzvah, they weren't allowed to move it. Mashma zokte Ramah the Sfirle, perhaps the La'acha Gemar Mitzvah Halulov. You see from this halacha that after the mitzvah is over, imenichu ala aretz. If you put it down, shuv asal tatal biyomtiv. You can't move it on yomtiv anymore. But tzarichin again. What is the Darkei Moshe proving? He's proving from Yerushalmi that a lulav, and once you put it down, it's a muktzah.
What he's now, proving is that it's always muktzah, except that when you use it.
Exactly. What he's really saying is Taisvus and Sukkah, that a lulav is intrinsically muktzah because it's not a kli. Why are you ever allowed to take it on Yom Tov? Because the Tzarech Mitzvah will be permitted, but when you finish the mitzvah, it goes back to being its old style of muktzah. Frek the Darkei Moshe can't be. Ta'kaim alon e muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. Frek the Ramah can't be. There's no such thing in halacha of being muktzah for half a day. If when Shabbos or Yom Tov came, this was had a purpose, i.e. to do a mitzvah, it stays like that the rest of Shabbos v'Yom Tov. So frek the Ramah, how could it be? V'havi ro'i ben Hashmoshes. It was ro'i ben Hashmoshes. Again, I didn't have a mitzvah ben Hashmoshes, but when ben Hashmoshes came, this was destined to be used for a mitzvah. So frek the Ramah, same akasha is mimicked by the Magen Avraham, it can't be muktzah half a day. Either it's yem muktzah or it's no muktzah. It's muktzah 24 hours or it's muktzah no hours. It can't be muktzah for 12 hours. How could the Ramah write?
But there's an exception for Yom
Tov. The night before the preparing.
Oh, right. Good. That's what I want to get to. It sounds like from the Ramah in his Kasha is that the night before is already enough to give it a status of Muktzah. Because again, the way it works with Muktzah, you got to make the decision by start of Shabbos. That's how it starts. So now by the time Shabbos started, I didn't have a mitzvah of Lulav, but I had the mitzvah tomorrow. So therefore, if I had the mitzvah tomorrow already, the night before, the lulav became already usable or destined to be used. So frek the Ramah, if that's true, why would the lulav become muktzah l'chatziyin? That's his kash. Says the
Chacham. Maybe it's not chatziyin.
Ah.
Because if the mitzvah only arises Valdek, in the morning, that's the one it's... If the mitzvah, no, I'll stop there. If the chiyuv to take the lulav only starts in the morning, that's when that yom starts. So it's not a chatziyom. The night before doesn't count in the cheshbon of whether it's chatziyom. By Shabbos, once Shabbos starts.
I would assume Yom Tov works with the same rule.
Not by lulav, because you don't take the lulav at night.
And therefore, what does that show me?
That shows me that it's not an Indian of chatzi yom, because the yom didn't start until the morning for purposes of the mitzvah of lulav.
So according to this, when night started, what was the status of the lulav?
It's not probably muktzah.
So what happened to the rule of muktzah l'chatzi yom?
It's not muktzah.
It doesn't apply.
Zokt Yepshleima Kluger Chachma Shleima, according to Taisis, of course it's muktzah the whole day. We know it's muktzah the whole day. But it's mutl tzarech mitzvah. Says Yepshleima Kluger, with all due respect, the Ramah forgot Taisis in Sukkah. He writes, Mechilas Kvoidai, they forgot about Taisus and Sukkah. Taisus and Sukkah says clearly the lulav is muktzah.
They just got around the Chatziyom.
Because it's muktzah the whole day. It's type of muktzah. Muktzah the Chatziyom means half a day it is muktzah and half a day it's not muktzah. Here it's muktzah the whole day. It's always muktzah. I have a heter. That's right. It's really muktzah the whole day.
That is really what I meant.
You have a heter. Because Chazal overrided the ban. That's why Zokti Shlomo Kluger Gevaldik.
Makes sense.
Taisvus and Sukkah is beautiful according to this. Taisvus and Sukkah saying Avad, it's Mukta the whole day. It's just that that's why you have to drop it afterwards. You can't have Mukta half a day. It's not Mukta half a day. It's Mukta the whole day. It's just that for the Tzarech Mitzvah, you're allowed to be Matur. That's the Chayyid of Shem. It's Gevaldik. It's beautiful.
So why is the second day
Yantaf
would be allowed?
Me,
Lord.
Because
that's only
the Rabbanah, right? That's also. That's the way they set it up that way. I would assume they set it up that it should also push against the Esed Muktzah. But this is all fine and dandy until we jump to one more Ramon Shulchan Aruch. Dr. Ramon Shulchan Aruch Nachas Lulav. I think it's tough. Reish Nun Ches. I think. I could be wrong, but you double check and let me know. Dr. Ramon. For also the Tatul HaLulav B'Shabbos, you're not allowed to move a Lulav on Shabbos. The Havei Ke'evin. It's like a rock. Which means it's Muktzah Machmas Gufoy, meaning it has no shame kli. It's not a kli, it's useless. It's a branch.
Now you got to split between the
esrig. Avala esrig, mutter. You can move the mutter. The roi lahareyach, you can use it for smell. That was the Ramah. Now I ask you a question. 1 second. Shouldn't this Ramah be told in Amachoykis, Rishayin, Rashi, and Taisus? Rashi will tell you that what? It's not an evan. It's a kli. Lulav is a kli. You can use it. Or perhaps this is talking about on Shabbos. Maybe even on Shabbos, Rashi will tell you it's not a kli. It's only a kli on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov I can use it for a mitzvah. And Rashi held using for a mitzvah is enough to make it a kli. While on Shabbos, I can't use it.
But doesn't the fact that it's a chesed shel mitzvah, regardless whether you could use it or not, doesn't that take it out? Make it a kli? I mean,
why?
Because it's not a non.
It's useless. On Shabbos, it's useless.
On
a deraisa level, you could. And that's the famous Shiloh. Let's say a guy decides on Shabbos, Sukkot, decides to shake his lulav. Will he get a check in Shemayim for what he's doing? Now he'll get a patch for going against the Rabbanan, that's for sure. But will he also get a check in the Kiyum HaMitzvah of Lekach L'Mochem? I'm not sure. That's a big Shiloh.
Did they take it away?
Right. Maybe Chazal can't. Perhaps. I mean, the question is, how does Chazal work? Does Chazal. Can they have the ability to make a mitzvah not a mitzvah? They can just tell me what I can and can't do. They can't change the Torah. They don't have the bayam on the Torah. They can change my life. They can say, you can't do this. That's what we call Shev Al Tasa. You're not allowed to shake the lulav. But if I did it, they're going to rewrite the Torah and say, when Hashem said, take a lulav 7 days, it didn't mean on Shabbos? Can they do that? That's a fundamental shayla. Same thing with Shofar, same thing with all these mitzvahs. But I ask you, the Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch that a lulav is like a stone. Now that sounds much more like which of the Rishonim? Taisvus. Taisvus says, Zok de Vilna Goyin. Where did this Ramah come from? Number 12. Hoyo v'ayin Rashi shom de v'ramasul kamash malan. Masha enkein de afla noshem lechazi. Ushabis kuf lamed aleph. It's the krol le mishri tiltel. Zaktiv on the goin. The mekar for saying that a lulav is not a kli comes from Rashi and Masechah Shabbos. Rashi and Masechah Shabbos. Didn't we learn Rashi and Masechah Shabbos holds that a lulav is. Rashi by Austin, we learned, says that a lulav is muktzah. But there's a Rashi in Sukkah. Didn't Rashi in Sukkah say that a lulav is not muktzah? It has a shame kli. So the Vilna Gaon says, no, from that Rashi you see the opposite. You see it's only a shame kli because men have the mitzvah. But on Shabbos, when no one has the mitzvah, then no one has the shame kli. A lulav is a useless object. It's like an oven. Which means our Rashi that we started off at the beginning of the year has no relevancy whatsoever for Shabbos. It's not a kli on Shabbos. It's only a kli on Yom Tov. Because on Yom Tov, I can actually use it for a mitzvah. And using it for a mitzvah is enough to give it a shame kli. But on Shabbos, where there's no mitzvah, then it can't become a shame kli. And therefore, it's taka, a useless stone. There's nothing to do with it. There's only one problem. The Taz, at number 13, writes, he disagrees with the Ramah. He says, the Ramah writes, what's the status of a shofar on Shabbos? A shofar on Shabbos is a klisha matal iser. It can be moved if you need a place or you need the object. Says the Taz, I think the lulav should be the same thing. A lulav should be allowed to be moved, which has major nafkaminas lalacha, typical shaylo Shabbos cholamayit. I always remind people in my family, but many times Friday before Shabbos, you leave the lulav on the table because you don't think about it, and then now it's Shabbos and it rains. The lulav is sitting on the dining room table. So what do you do now? So according to Ramah, you're stuck. You're going to have a lulav starting in the middle of the table because you can't move it. According to the Taz, you could move it if the place that you need is being occupied by the lulav, so you move the lulav, you take it. What's the nekudas hamachlekes between the Taz and the Ramah? The chayyur, the Taz will tell you that, of course, it's a kli. Like Rashi and Sukkah said, it's a kli. If it's a kli, it's a kli. That's it. It's a kli on Shabbos, it's a kli on Yom Tov. It doesn't matter. So the chayyur, the Taz's argument is that he holds like Rashi.
So if it's totally on whether it's a mitzvah or not, if the kli status is totally on whether it's a mitzvah or not.
But then you're going to have a problem, because how can the Taz honestly justify that the lulav is a kli on Shabbos? There's no mitzvah,
so
there's no kiyama mitzvah.
No, but
it's not a kli, it's useless. Why is it even a klisha matlisser? The Taz. One second. So Zakti Mishnah Brura. Mishnah Brura says in number 40, why does the Ramah hold like a stone? So you can't even move a tzarek gufa mekoymei. Veloy dami l'shoifer. The sharina m'soif se metavkov peches la tatl tzarek gufa mekoymei. The shani hasem to have a cleave a roi lazy dover. He's bavoning the Taz's kasha, the Mishnah Brura. Says the Mishnah Brura, a shoifer is a klisha matlisser because it's at least a kli. It gets to stage one. It's a kli. You can use it. To have a kishal of boy, you could use it for picking up water. You could use it for something. Ma'ashenkin hachad the eitz ba'almu. So what is the chayyur Mishnah Brura explaining that it's not even a kli? So what's the Taz going to answer back to this?
I can get something off the top shelf.
That's
not enough to be a kli.
The Taz says you can move.
The Taz holds it is a kli, and it's a kli shemal after list, and therefore you're allowed to move it to a kufal to a
mekayim. Maybe he holds that it's not totally whether or not you can do the mitzvah that day. Since it was ever,
the chayyur you're going to have to say, the Taz holds like Rashi and Sukkah, that a lulav is a kli every day of Sukkot. Shabbat is Tuesday every day. And therefore, if it's a kli that I can't use, it becomes a kli shemal after list.
It's not a kli in and of itself because it could be used for something. It's
that's
a kli
right.
Because you needed it for a mitzvah.
And you have to speak out, and you have to bavorn.
So what do you do the first day of Yom Tov? What if the first day of Sukkot is Shabbos, and it hasn't yet been used as a
kli? So you're going to have to say one of two possibilities. Either the
Taz bothers me every year.
You're going to have to say one of two possibilities. One possibility in the Taz is, you'll have to say that the Taz holds that since Midrash Raisa, if I were to take this lulav, I'd be yotzei mitzvah. Although I'm not allowed to because of the Rabbanon, that's enough
so
to inject it. The other pshat is that Taz will tell you that because it's going to be used, l'tzarich mitzvah, even though today I can't because my hands are tied, that makes it a shame mitzvah, and therefore it has a shame kli if it's a kli.
Or he could hold that in that case where it's the first day, that year it's
maybe
not.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll tell you
it
not.
It still has to be used as a kli once.
Now,
to
the
give
whole.
It the shame.
What's very shver in all this is the Birkas of Rama. Avram Erlinger. And his sefer on Sukkah, he has a kash. He says he doesn't understand. He thinks that according to Rashi, the Taz is right, and the Ramah is incorrect. Frekter of Avram Erlinger, he says, I don't get it. If you hold like Rashi in Sukkah, then the lulav on Shabbos should be a klisha matal iser. Mechilas koyd, I don't understand why he thinks like that. Why don't you make the chiluk that we made? That a lulav on Shabbos is completely useless, because it's not even usable for a mitzvah. Rashi in Sukkah will tell you on Yom Tov, a lulav is not muktzah, because on Yom Tov I can use it. But on Shabbos, where I can't even use it from it, so then even Rashi would agree, it resorts back to being like an evan. But I found a Rabbeinu Menoyach. Rabbeinu Menoyach writes, in Perek Zayin, Hilchos Lulav 16, he writes, that there are those who disagree, and they say, the mutter letalto lulav ahadas v'arava b'Shabbos. You're allowed to move a lulav for anything. Afilu b'zman hazeh, even today. Shal is why. The teretz is.
Why can't you just say? Because you could use the lulav for anything. Unless you want to reach someone under the bed or something like that.
Because Rashi, because Taisa says it's not a shame kli. Taisa, that doesn't make it a kli. The fact that you can use it doesn't is not enough to make it a kli.
So what does it?
So you got to learn all of Mishnah's klaim. Kalim. I was the last time. You learn all of Kalim. You'll let me know. So l'chayra, what's the raya? He says they bring a raya from the suya and sukkah. Rashi and sukkah says it has a shame kli. So if it has a shame kli, it has a shame kli all the time. That's similar to what we saw perhaps in the Taz. The Taz is arguing that a lulav has a shame kli, and therefore it's only a kli shemalach delisa. Why? Because of the Taz, it's a kli. Why is it a kli? Because Rashi said in sukkah it's a kli. Although one could have argued that Rashi was talking about on Yom Tov.
Yeah, why is Rashi saying Shabbos? You know, because, I don't move it then.
Which Rashi? The Vilna Gaon quoted the Vilna Gaon quoted a Rashi like that. So that's why we're going to have to be mechalik that Rashi in Sukkah was talking about on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, since you have the mitzvah, therefore it has a shem kli. But on Shabbos, where there's no mitzvah, it has no shem kli, even in Rashi.
Because if you look at the chetzah, even on Shabbos, right? This is a chetzah. As a gavra, I practically cannot
yes.
Because Rava came and said I can't. But Lagabi, the lulav is still chesed shel mitzvah.
That might be the argument of the Taz. That might be Pashup Shah and the Taz. So we need to talk, Glenn, that we'll wrap
it.
I just read it now, yeah. What we need to talk about next week is the Netziv's Pshat and an interesting halacha l'maisa. What's the status of your lulav and Esri the night before Sukkot?
The night of
Sukkot. The first night of Sukkot. Is your lulav mukta?
Now, your case
on Shabbos? Shabbos, according to the Ramah, you would not be allowed to move it. According to the Taz, you could move it.
Because it's shayach limits.
That's right, something along those lines. You got to see some limits. I don't know the answers.
So, what do we do?
I think we don't. I think we're choishes for the Ramah. We don't move it. We don't
move it. You'll find out before next Sukkot.
But I think in lumdis, I think what we want from lumdis is very relevant. Is the lulav mukta the night before Yom Tov? L'chayra, that should be very much telling what we're saying now.
Yeah, in other words, whether you can make it that night, you got to wait till the next morning to make it, get up there.
Where do you move it? It's on the dining table. You don't need it anyway.
No.
I mean, it was a...